Bullet Club for life.
What it is? What it do? Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. We talk wrestling collaboration. Josh, Joel, and Mo back for a menage a pod once again. It's been way too long, gentlemen. Welcome back to the pod, Mo. Welcome back, Joel. Time to argue.
I never, ever, ever want you to refer to the three of us as a menage again in any form, any fashion. Let's not do that.
I may or may not have done that on purpose just for the Mo reaction.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something. I'm here. It's Mo. I'm here. Like I say, I had a little nap beforehand. I'm awake now. You could even say I'm woken.
Oh wow.
And let's do this.
It's going to be very interesting just because of so last year with the start of the One Fall podcast, Joel and I had been, you know, pretty decently positive on the WWE product, and it seemed like you were very down on it, and you were kind of ahead of the curve with the Ring of Honor and the Japan stuff, and Joel and I, to a degree, were, you know, oh yeah, this is good and this is good about WWE, and it seems, especially we're going to be doing our award show in about a month here, it seems in the year that's flipped upside down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this past week, the WWE product for me, I mean, I was actually, well, it's kind of, let's put it this way. I think that you were the most positive, and I was really down on it. And Joel was probably a little bit in between, wouldn't you say, Joel?
Yeah.
That was kind of how it was. You could see the, you know, and now, like, I feel like they had a good stretch here, and I was feeling pretty positive, you know, from about the time Samoa Joe and Lesnar started their program until a little bit after SummerSlam, but felt like it fell off the rails leading into Survivor Series. And right now, I don't know, man. You say, I mean, we have New Japan and we have these other great things out there, but it's just like I'm not feeling it right now for sure.
I guess the state of wrestling is really interesting right now. I think that's one of the reasons why I think we were all eager to get back to doing a podcast, was because things, you can feel that there is a shift in many ways on how things are being laid out. And you're absolutely right. Last year, I think we were a little bit more like, yeah, no, there's definitely some positives. There's some silver linings to this. We know Roman's going to be main eventing WrestleMania. We don't know who he's going to face at that time. But
well, Mania we do. It's going to be Brock.
No, last year.
Oh, right.
We didn't fully know he was facing Taker. And then I think it was that Survivor Series pay-per-view that really did it in for me of like, I'm not enjoying this.
The one this year
was...
Yeah, because you and I met for that show and we were both like, we were both decently excited, especially for the main event for AJ and Brock. We're like, we're pretty excited for this show. And you and I both just were super dejected after.
Yeah, the booking, the way everyone was positioned, and I think the biggest thing, how quickly the NXT guys were shot down, and not really shot down in a blaze of glory either, just kind of like, oh, there goes Nakamura, oh, there goes Bobby Roode, oh, Balor's gone too, oh, Triple H and Hunter, Triple H, Kurt Angle.
He wishes there could be two of him.
Yeah. there's Hunter, there's Kurt. Cena was a weird little waste of time.
Cena was super weird.
Orton there, and a guy that quite honestly can't wrestle. The only reason he had a 4-star match at WrestleMania is because he was facing AJ Styles. And Shane was there. That's how they closed it out. You didn't build any of your new stars. You didn't help solidify Finn. You didn't help solidify Knox. You didn't help solidify Rude. You took all these guys and you kind of... You help build Stroh, but even Stroh wasn't really rememberable in this match. The thing that I remember the most that pops in my head when you talk about this year's Survivor Series is Kurt Angle not being able to move at all in the ring and Triple H.
Yeah.
And that's not good to me.
I mean, leading into the thing also, I mean, you guys said you were excited. I wasn't, and I was talking to Addy about this, and what I was explaining was, he was like, "Well, it looks pretty good," and I'm like, "Well, here's the thing is, the card is pretty good. Like I saw four or five matches, I thought that's pretty good, but it felt like all the storylines they had, they just threw them aside so they could build this good card without anything, you know, and so." You can position a good match, but if you don't position a good match with a good storyline, or you position too many babyfaces versus babyfaces and heels versus heels, and it doesn't make any real sense. I looked at that main event and I thought there was like 10 people in it, and I think like 8 of them were babyfaces, and like the two heels are like, you know, people like Samoa Joe, who people cheer anyways, and Triple H, yeah, who people are going to cheer anyways.
And don't forget, Mo, about Randy Orton and Triple H and John Cena not wearing the geek shirts.
Of course, you know. But yeah, I mean, even when you're talking about, like, I know it takes a while to establish somebody as a main event to a degree, and reputation and this and that, but even when we're talking, I was looking at that main event, and because you knew that was going on last, despite, you know, the fact that AJ and Brock should have, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
But you look at that and you're going, okay, it's going to go on last. But I also looked at it and went, okay, who are the 10 people in the match, guys? List them out for me.
It was Joe, Hunter.
Wait, slowly. Let's slowly.
Okay. So Joe.
38 or 39?
About that. Finn. Hunter.
47?
Yeah, Finn.
38, I think.
36. Finn's 36?
Okay. Yep.
Really? I thought he was younger than that.
Nope.
Kurt?
46, I believe. 47?
Strowman.
What is he, 34?
I think he's younger.
33? I don't think he's much younger than that.
I'll Google that one. And then the other side, we have Shane O.
48 now, I believe.
Bobby, I know, is 39.
39, yeah.
Nakamura.
38, I think. 39, some of
them. Who else was in that match? Oh, Cena.
Cena,
40. Braun is 34, by the way.
Braun is 34, okay.
40
for Cena.
Randy.
Randy, 38, I think.
About that, probably.
Right? So even before, like, the average age of this match, I bet you comes out to 41, 42 years old of the 10 people in it.
Randy's 37.
Randy's 37. Okay, so I mean, we're looking at a 40-year-old, like, median
age. Bobby Roode is older than Randy Orton, and Randy Orton, Bobby Roode's an up-and-comer.
I know, but that's the thing, right? Like, I'm like, I looked at this and I thought, like, we're looking at, like, this is your main event is old, and then New Japan is giving me, you know.
Well, how's about the main event for the pay-per-view the day previous? Yes, you did have some older guys in there, like an Eric Young, for example. You had some young bucks in there to
really. Well, NXT was, again, and I knew that. I mean, I was like, I'm looking forward to NXT. NXT yeah. will be better because, you know, it's I don't know. It's always better.
Well, also, Mo, too, like, when you left, Joe, this is the thing that Joel and I took away from that. So you left Survivor Series, and
I just want to say Brock and AJ also both 40-year-olds. So
yeah, so you leave the Survivor Series match, and the big takeaway is Triple H and to a degree Strowman. You leave the War Games match, and you're talking about Killian Dane, about Killian Dane before that match. You're like, holy shit, Killian Dane! Oh, Alexander Wolfe! Oh, yep. Of course, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong. You're talking about all these people, but I guess the most important thing out of that is, I went to that match, and you looked at Sanity, and you're like, Eric Young. And you left that match like, wow, Alexander Wolf took a hell of a bump, but holy crap, Killian Dane is going to be somebody.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Young is old. Eric Young and Bobby Fish are older guys. But yeah. Other than that, that match had a lot of young people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what WWE needs right now. Like, this is the problem. This Survivor Series, again, wasn't looking forward to it. It felt like WrestleMania in that, hey, we can't actually draw with the people we have because we fuck them up all year long, so let's bring back the stars of the past and to save it. It had that feel.
And like, I look at it, another example for NXT, a 22-year-old was made a star, at least yeah. the building blocks to being a bigger star with Velveteen Dream, a gimmick that was a little bit like, oh, we don't know how this is going to pan out. And yet now Patrick Clark's been able to take this Rick Rude-like character and combine him with a little bit of Gold Dust and make his own character. And Aleister Black has a great entrance, great look, great presence. And both these guys you look at and go, yep, I do not want these guys on the main roster because they will screw them up.
Well, Vince will ruin Killian Dane. He'll be wearing a kilt.
And Aleister Black will be Bray Wyatt 2.0.
Pretty much.
Yeah, unfortunately, isn't that the scary thing? Is that I mean, we've seen it time and time again. Like they bring up the people from NXT, and they never seem to get it. Well, again, we're talking about it comes at the end of the day. The booking is inconsistent. The writing is not very good, and the guy who makes the ultimate decisions is out of touch. I mean, let's talk about Finn and the Royal Rumble, how he's going to face Brock and now isn't. Because Vince McMahon, at the end of the day, is out of touch.
Yep.
And this is a wicked example of how out of touch he is.
There's some stuff that he kind of gets right. Like, he got Strowman right, so I'll give him that. That was the right call with Strowman, but there's way more things that he's getting wrong. And not having Finn in that position, after you just saw what he did with AJ Styles, and you can duplicate that at the Royal Rumble.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. He doesn't want to put him in that position at the Royal Rumble because he's not over enough. Meanwhile, AJ Styles is facing Jinder Mahal at the next pay-per-view in the main event.
Yeah, both Finn and AJ face the top two contenders for Worst Wrestler of the Year this year. So both have had their trials and tribulations.
Honestly, like, this is just, it's like, he's not over enough, and meanwhile you push this Mahal character down our throats for months, you know? Like, it's bullshit. It's a bullshit excuse from a guy who just looks at him and says he's too small and doesn't get it. He doesn't.
Every time he said it's too small, that guy, whether it be Benoit, Brian, Punk, Jericho to a degree, is Guerrero. Proven him wrong. Guerrero, it's always been proven. AJ, I mean, he came in and said, oh yeah, you know, AJ will be the Pitbull, pal. And then AJ did the feud with Jericho, and he's like, God damn, this kid's kind of good. And then he puts him into a feud with Roman. He gives Roman some of his best matches, although I don't think Roman's a bad wrestler, but AJ elevated him. AJ brought Jinder to some okay matches so far. I heard in the house show they've had some good matches, and I can tell you that's not because of Mahal.
No, it is not because of Mahal.
I think AJ has finally filled that HBK-shaped hole in Vince's heart. I think after everything that happened with the TLC, and boy, that TLC pay-per-view was something that I don't really want to talk about, but I'll touch on the AJ. Like, the fact that he came in, wrestled in Peru, was it?
Yeah.
Wrestled in Peru, then went and had a match with Finn that was a really good match, and then wrestled the next night on Raw, and then wrestled on Tuesday. I think Vince more and more sees him as, I don't want to say the HBK, but I feel like he's maybe the Edge for...
And by the way, Joel, he brought life back to Finn's career because you had a moment, which you rarely get in WWE anymore because everything's just, they blow their load and everything, which they did with that match. But you have this moment where the two face off, Finn wins, Finn is rejuvenated after the bullshit Bray Wyatt stuff, and then the next night he loses to Kane clean. And then we wonder why he's not over.
And yeah, I don't even think exactly. Finn's not... over, because you look at the crowd reaction, the crowd participating in the entrance and just general kind of reaction for Finn matches, there's something there, but it's just kind of that blind eye. It's kind of that Brian blind eye. No, Brian's not tearing the house down crowd wise. No. It's got to be Batista Norton. Got to be Batista Norton. They get in such a tunnel vision. They're afraid that Brian's kind of hurt things in some ways, I think, because now they're so concerned that the crowd is going to hijack what they want, that they make sure that they try to kill whatever could potentially harm that. And I think Vince is very protective of Roman. You can see all the time.
You think?
All the time effort and energy goes into making sure Roman Reigns is the top guy. There's no one better.
We just gave him a belt so we can say he was a Grand Slam champion. Like, the belt isn't elevated. We just gave him a championship so we can say he's a Grand Slam champion.
And Joe's probably going to job out to Roman.
100% he's going to.
And Roman's going to hold the title, and Vince will get his Ultimate Warrior version 2.0 moment. when he beats Brock. I texted you how the main event for Roman and Brock's going to go.
Yeah. My question to you guys is so Brock is confirmed for Elimination Chamber as well, right?
Yeah.
So my question is, what do they do with Roman in that pay-per-view? Because obviously I would assume that a Joe would be in that match. They may even call Cena to be in a match like that. Do you put Roman in the Elimination Chamber?
I would imagine you could. That's where you take that. You have him defend the U.S. title, and that's where he gets screwed somehow, and then you get it off of him. And that right. keeps him out of that picture. I mean, I think that would be the easy way to do it.
Right, because I don't know. I have been on the record.
Or the IC title, I guess.
Yeah, I have said Nakamura is winning the Rumble because I think they are going to go Nakamura and AJ.
I read an article today that had said that that's the direction they're currently looking at going.
Yeah,
which is hilarious. After last week, they only put him out there as like one of the lumberjacks. And this week, they didn't even put him on TV.
No, because they're just trying to save him.
Idiots.
They don't know how to book him. Like, I don't know what the feud would be for Nakamura right now.
I don't know.
Like, really, there's nothing. Like you can put him in a feud with Sammy and KO. I guess that's the way. Like, I would assume that next week, maybe we'll do Sammy and Nakamura since we did Randy and KO this week, since they're doing a weird tag team themes with Randy and Nakamura.
Now, my question to you, and I saw this pop up on the wrestling Reddit. Some people are speculating that there's a chance that they may be building towards a Sammy and KO versus Shane and Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. What's the possibility of that happening? Because the way I look at it, and I'll give my point of view quickly.
And I can comment because I had some news update on that today.
But
go ahead, Joe.
The way I kind of look at it is, if the guy wants to wrestle, that's very apparent. He 100% wants to wrestle. And
he's going to wrestle. He's growing his hair and beard out to prove it.
Yeah, and Brie was on Lillian Garcia's podcast, and Brian's gone to multiple doctors and been cleared from all of them, to the point that the doctors are like, so why can't you wrestle? They're questioning
Even Brianna's behind it now.
Yeah, and Brie's even kind of said on the Lillian podcast, too, like, she does, like, WWE has been more than fair, and she stated Brian wants to wrestle for them. He doesn't want to leave. He wants to wrestle for them because they were so good during the pregnancy and giving him time off and all that. He feels a lot of loyalty to the company. But if he can't get cleared by them, she said he'll feel really bad about it, but he will leave. But he does feel loyalty of how good they were about giving him maternity leave and giving him a job when he didn't need to. But he's ready to move on. Like, that's the biggest story next year, period, is what Daniel Bryan does.
And I think if we see him wrestle at Mania, that might be a testing ground. And I mean, if you're going to have him come back and you kind of want to see where he is health-wise, then I think it's a little bit of a safer bet to have him in a tag team, have him facing two guys that I would consider more of the safer guys in ring, and Sammy and KO. The only thing that still concerns me is the seizures, is the post-concussion seizures. And
he hasn't had one in years, guys. Years.
So that, hearing something like that,
did Paul Kariya have seizures, by the way? I know he's doing the same thing that Brian did with the chamber. I know Christian is too, but Christian doesn't sound like he's interested in coming back. Do we know Kariya? Have seizures?
I don't know.
I don't know. He's very, sure. like, that's one thing with Paul Kariya. He was very private. But what was it? Was it he lost, I want to say 70%, but I'm probably wrong, but he lost a good chunk of brain function.
He doesn't remember coming back and scoring that goal against the Devils, even.
No, he doesn't remember the day before that, the game day, and then I think it was either a day or two after. He doesn't remember any of that.
And Brian, I haven't heard as much of that with. Like, the only regret I've ever really heard him say was that time that he got the stinger against Randy, and then Hunter and him fought back and forth. He regrets coming out that day. He wishes that he would have left and listened to Hunter. But aside from that, I haven't heard anything about memory loss. Like, the seizures was a while ago, and I get the concern for it. But I think now that he's getting cleared by all these doctors, I think
it's been crazy, years. Man. I think it's been years since he's had a seizure.
Yeah. Like, so, when did he retire? 2015?
I believe 2015. Yeah. I think last seizure was something like 2013. Like, it wasn't even, you know, one of the things that was happening more recently. Though it was for, one of the reasons why he wouldn't get cleared. Obviously, it was a huge issue when Dr. Joseph Maroon or whatever the hell his name is there heard about it. That was one of his big issues. But
and until AJ Styles, Bryan was the greatest performer, arguably, of the last 20 years.
That's something I want to ask you guys about, because in leading up to the Brock and AJ thing, Heyman goes, the greatest in-ring performer of his generation. Some people would argue Finn Balor, but he, the greatest. And then when Bryan was doing the advocate stuff, he called him, yeah. He called AJ the greatest. And I was sitting there trying to figure, I was like, you know what? It was the greatest in-ring performer of his generation in North America is either AJ or Daniel Bryan. And yeah. I was like, literally, I can't pick. Like, I was literally going back and forth going,
I think it is AJ. I think it is AJ.
I don't know, man.
But I don't know.
Don't ask me, because
AJ's had a bigger platform. Let's just say that AJ's had the bigger platform with TNA at its peak, and then Japan as it was rising, and now WWE. So AJ's had more of a platform to showcase his stuff. A lot of Bryan's stuff was on the indies and Dragon Gate and ROH, where a lot of people couldn't see the full set of things, I will say, for Bryan's sake.
All those years, though, that they were both wrestling, and he was in TNA and ripping it up, and Daniel Bryan was in ROH and Dragon Gate and these things, at the Observer at the End of the Year Awards, the Best Technician, Best Wrestler, all these awards would go to Daniel Bryan.
Well, they
he got voted into the Pro Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame on, like, his, you know, right away, whereas AJ went in this year, but the first time he was on the ballot, he got like 16% of the vote and was kicked right off. And
yeah, Alvarez was saying that he was surprised he was back on this fast. When they were talking about the because the class happened this week, Alvarez was saying, I was surprised, like, he's had great, but he's like, that he's bounced back this fast. And Meltzer kind of said what Joel and you kind of echoed, just like how he's kind of the Shawn Michaels in a way. He just elevates everything that he's around.
5 years ago, I absolutely thought Daniel Bryan, when they were both, you know, really, like, you know, I absolutely thought Daniel Bryan was the better of the two 5 years ago. But AJ's, his longevity and the fact that he might be better at 40 than ever, like AJ has actually managed to do the impossible, and I feel like in the last 2-3 months, close the gap a little bit on Wrestler of the Year to.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll get it, because the other two con guys are pretty damn good.
Yeah, no, he's not going to, but he's actually managed to close the gap, and that's impressive, because he was, I wasn't even thinking about him, you know.
You know what's interesting about him that I just realized, why I think you can make the argument? AJ Styles is the only guy in the four major companies of the last 20, of the 2000s and the 2010s that has had a five-star match, not by Meltzer's ranking, but you can argue some of them. He's had at least a five-star match in each of the four major companies. In TNA with that three-way, in Japan, pick.
yeah, he had several in Japan.
In Ring of Honor,
let's say,
pick.
Let's say against Minoru Suzuki, for I think that's probably the most famous five-star match.
What would you say in Ring of Honor would be a five-star? Sure, there's plenty. And then WWE, you can go the Cena ones, for example.
Yeah.
So that's pretty damn impressive to say that all the major companies around the world, he's had five-star matches in all of them.
And,
yes, absolutely.
And there was a quote floating around online that Vince had apparently told AJ, I wish I signed you 5 years ago.
Probably. I mean, look what they were doing with him 5 years ago. He was Dark AJ. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Claire Lynch.
Terrible. Yes. I remember. Yeah. But it's the same thing as Samoa Joe. Like I said, you think of Samoa Joe in TNA, and then you say, you know, he was only their world champion once for like 4 months.
And I remember the tattoo or something like. Man.
And you're like, because right now, like my favorite thing going on in WWE right now is KO and Sammy. Like, that's entertaining. They're great together.
I just
together.
Like seeing Sammy dance.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's just, you know, but like the best act, overall act, I mean, Samoa Joe might be behind AJ, you know?
I still blink the fact that they haven't messed him up. Like, I just keep on, like, how did they not screw him up yet?
Because all they do is say, go out there and beat somebody up and be mean. And the thing about Samoa Joe that's great about him is he's the only guy who doesn't feel like he's performing. Mm-hmm. He feels like he really wants to fuck you up. He's, you know, and when he says to, you know, when he attacks Roman, and then afterwards he's screaming at him, that doesn't feel like a guy who's acting. That feels like a guy who's in the moment, who's it's real to him. He makes it feel real. And that's why he's, like, more than anybody, more than AJ, anybody, like, Cesaro's an incredible wrestler, you know. But nobody other than maybe Brock, because Brock is real. And in some ways, even more than Brock, I think.
Yeah.
Joe makes it feel like it's we're not sitting here in some scripted TV show with a bunch of phoniness. Like, this guy feels real.
And I think that's the one thing that is always, like, Joe is always kind of that sleeper quiet. You know he's there, and when he's on your TV, he immediately grabs your attention. We don't talk about him as much, but I guess it's a tribute to how good he is that you just instantly go, oh, Joe's in this feud, this is going to be good.
That different presence that he brings.
And I certainly hope Vince recognizes that presence and looks beyond what Vince may look and see at Samoa Joe, but recognize that he's just a really, really, really good performer. And seeing this type of Samoa Joe, I definitely think, because the rumors have always been that Vince desperately wants to move AJ back to Raw and have him on Raw. I hope that we eventually get a Joe and an AJ feud, because I think that both those guys would definitely play off each other, and I think they would exemplify their strengths again.
Well, we've seen it. We know they can.
Yeah.
Oh, it would be great in WWE if they did it. Yeah. I mean, they would get a big reaction from the crowd. The crowd would, you know, get that "this is awesome" chant before they even touch thing. Like, it would definitely work for them to do it. But I also wouldn't mind seeing Joe being the guy to replace AJ over on SmackDown and getting the world title. I mean, Joe's one of those guys who, again, it's like he needs two or three good years on top here, and really on top, instead of just upper mid card where he is now, but really on top for people to recognize how good he is and for him to be seen as a Hall of Famer, because he certainly has the talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I want to ask this, because you said the North America part. If you're including globally, are you saying that AJ's better, or are you putting a Tanahashi, Okada, and so on into that conversation?
Well, Okada, I think of Okada as the next generation with Roman Reigns here.
So Tanahashi, then we're talking
about. So Tanahashi and Nakamura would be the two.
Yeah.
You know, and so now, you go Daniel Bryan, Tanahashi, Nakamura, and
is Liger more in the 90s at that point?
Liger would be the next, he'd be another, he'd be two generations ahead,
I think we got to give credit too to Jericho, but Jericho I see is more a performer than just overall in ring as much.
Jericho's great, but you wouldn't put him there. He's weird. Yeah, he's like, again, he's probably the Rock's generation, right? Like, like, you have the different generations. You have the Cena. Like, it's funny in general when you talk about generations, you're not talking about 20 years in wrestling. You're talking like generally a 5-year cycle. So you have the Nakamura, AJ, and now the current one is like Okada and Reigns Omega. You know, he's 35, 36, but yeah, you definitely call him right now. And same thing with
where would we put Punk in all of this?
Well, I mean, he wasn't in ring as good as AJ. Like, he's not.
No.
You know, you can't. And he's in his generation for sure.
Yeah.
You'd go with the generation before that would be Cena and Edge, and you know, and then the generation before that would be Rock and Jericho and Goldberg, and then there before that you'd have and Austin. I don't know. I guess he would qualify there, but then you'd have Sting and Michaels and Bret Hart. You know, so you kind of it happens pretty quickly that the generation of main eventers turns over.
It does.
Yeah. Cena, I think that's what makes Cena's run at the top so impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Was how long he did it and how consistently he did it. Say what you will during the late to mid 2000s.
Man, that guy got a good match out of the Great Khali.
Yeah, like, it was a hell of a match.
It was a good match. And that his Omega match.
It was smoke and mirrors, don't get me wrong, because there was a false count anywhere. But,
of course.
But he pulled it off.
That was when I ultimately had respect for Cena, is when that Great Khali, because he had the Umaga match, the one at Royal Rumble, which is one of my all-time favorites. Awesome. Love that match. Then the match that he had with Khali, I'm like, Cena just get like at least a 3.5-4-star match out of the Great Khali?
Yeah.
Like, holy crap.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Unbelievable. I guess one of the reasons we did this pod, and I guess this is the big debate. So Joel and I have been debating this, and I want to get your opinion first on this, Mo. So what the Bucks and Cody are doing, the 10,000 seat arena.
Go ahead, Joel.
Well, before we get into that, I just want to quickly touch on the Woken gimmick that's bubble up. Because it is just its infancy again. And I'll quickly give you my take. I think the fact that he didn't come in with it, and it's been such a cool-off period, I think it helps it, because it kind of makes you interested in the gimmick. It doesn't seem like it was beaten to death, because this is just a kind of mid-card gimmick. This isn't going to elevate Hardy to the main event, but it's that nice little mid-card thing that you can do. It's a little weird. It's a little quirky. Got some wrestling satire to it. So I think that cool-off period definitely...
you know what doesn't help, Joel? It's who he's shooting with.
That's the one part that I'm concerned about, but I'm watching Hardy's video that he published himself, and just the way he's been tweeting, and just the way he's been kind of going at house shows lately, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic that he can at least do most of what he was able to do within TNA. Hopefully they let him just kind of roll with it. There are concerns that he is facing Bray, but... hopefully the broken brilliance of Matt Hardy can shine through and get a decent feud, but Bray's going to be a tough customer to get that out of.
Mo?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, actually, about this, but let's start with this. You say it's a mid-card gimmick, and that's probably where WWE sees it, but it definitely has potential to get over at main event level. We've seen that. And if it does, then he should be pushed as that to a main event level. And so I don't know really what the upside is for it, but definitely he was getting, and he's already Matt Hardy, which helps, right? And then this gimmick, it's so different. Like, I wonder how much creative control he's going to have. Because, I mean, that was the thing. He had a bunch of creative control. And
Borash was a big part of this, too. We can slam Jeremy Borash where we want, but he was a big part, and they did their stuff in TNA, and it wasn't the same. But, you know, there were still some elements that worked. For the WWE production staff, it's great, but who's the writer that's going to be helping? But if it was Jimmy Jacobs there still, I'd be comfortable with it.
Well, that's it. I mean, if the WWE and Vince McMahon sees this and really wants to put their fingers on it, well, it's going to suck. Because it'll suck underneath them. But when we saw what they tried to do, when they tried to do something with it, with the Wyatts and the New Day, and how much that just didn't work, right? And just not getting it. But even the videos you're seeing online that are being produced already have a different look, different film stock and everything than what we see from WWE. And that's the type of stuff that they can't lose. It has to feel different than everything else.
Yes. Yes.
In the presentation. And if it does, then it can get over. And if it gets over, then you run with it. And it's one of those things, it's an interesting thing, because we'll also see how quickly Jeff becomes part of this, even though he's hurt.
Yeah.
And because he's a key part too, and whether or not they bring in all the other family members and do all these things. We'll see how much of this they
have. Vanguard was restarted.
Yes, I know. I know. But it's interesting because this is like Matt's moment if this happens, because Jeff had his moment in the past. I mean, Jeff was he was more athletic. He was a better wrestler. He was more charismatic. But people always said Matt Hardy was the guy who was more creative. And so they always said long-term for a career in wrestling, even when the Hardys were at their hottest 10 years ago or whatever in the WWE, they would say, Matt's the guy that you want to keep around, because 10, 20, 30 years from now, he can be working in the booking committee and he can be doing great things still. Jeff's not that guy. So his long-term legacy is actually potentially better than Jeff's, even though Jeff certainly had a better in-ring career. So this is where his legacy goes and kind of where he stays in WWE and where how he's seen and how important he can be within the company kind of relies on this. So it's a very I'm very interested to see how it's going to work out.
Yeah, me too. I think that you need to bring Rebby in. I think you need to bring... And this could be something that helps Bray out. You know, as much as a little bit of a spoiler alert, he's my worst wrestler of the year. He's had the two worst programs of this year.
Oh, God. At least but we never saw Sister Abigail.
Oh,
at least
thank
they just
you, Lord.
Dropped it. They just dropped it. Thing.
But this
we
could
never
be
got
something
a resolution.
That...
We never got a resolution to that storyline, and I'm good with that. For once, I'm good with it.
Yeah. This could be something that actually helps Bray Wyatt is being in this crazy world. Like, you look at who was the weird group with Abyss that he faced in TNA?
Oh,
Crazy Steve.
Crazy Steve and then Rosemary.
Hell, were they called?
Whatever they were called. Like, none of those guys, were just really...
Sanity, but it wasn't Sanity, but it was something like that. Ugh.
Started with a D or something, I believe. But my point is, they worked. I cared about what Abyss did, and I hadn't seen Abyss on TV since I stopped watching TNA, and I cared about what Abyss did in that line. And Abyss could be weird. He could be Joseph Park, and I'd love to see them go to the Lake of Reincarnation or whatever they call it, and him become Husky Harris.
Was it Decay? Was that?
It was Decay.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd love to see the Lake of Reincarnation and see him be Husky Harris, for example. I think there's fun stuff you can still do.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that God, they blew it with, again, another NXT character that was great that they blew it with.
Yep.
Why didn't they
If he wasn't actually as good a performer and talented as a performer and charismatic as he is, it wouldn't have lasted as long as it has.
No.
The thing is, why they didn't just have this creepy kind of cult, like Charles Manson-like character, as opposed to Supernatural. You remove that Supernatural elements, I think you have a good character.
Kind of like what Punk tried to do.
When he was that character, that's the thing. When you watch, if you go back on the WWE Network, $9.95, or $9.99, whatever the hell it is. I don't know, we're in Canada, it's a different price. But if you go back and you watch those early NXTs and you see the first vignettes, and the first time he shows up, you're like, man, he's still great. Like, he still had it.
He's Waylon Mercy.
Well, he's Waylon Mercy, but better and more, even more. But yeah, that character, that's original. Like, to me, the idea of a cult leader who's really charismatic and can manipulate people and is smarter than people, and to me, that character is truly scary. Whereas this fat, dirty wizard, as Filthy Tom Lawler calls him, is not scary. There's nothing scary about this because it just feels silly.
But the
character had potential to be truly scary.
You look at, I was watching a show on Netflix called Mindhunter, and they were talking about serial killers. And Charles Manson was the epitome of that for these characters. And all law enforcement would talk about him, but they wouldn't talk about him a lot because he was almost like a forbidden name. So you take that, and that's what Manson was. He was a charismatic cult leader that led his family and committed the atrocities that he did. Bray Wyatt could have tapped into that because that's real. That is something that's real. And I mean, you could even talk on a bigger level right now, people being indoctrinated by the president of the United States, and whatever he says, people buy into right away. He's charismatic, so people jump on that. So if you take in elements of that and put that with Bray, and let him be this kind of creepy, and the way I do really like how Bray talks in his promos, and the way he moves. It's just that supernatural element that always sucks because
scripting sucks.
Yeah,
because there's no psychology. His delivery is terrific, but there's no psychology behind what he's saying because they don't know how to script. the psychology. So.
Yeah, and that's what's sorely lacking, and I think that's sorely lacking across the board for WWE, is logic in why things happen. And, like, we look at New Japan, I'm about 99% sure that Naito's winning the championship on January 4th.
But it
doesn't deter me from watching it, because I'm excited to see it, I'm excited to see how that match plays out. But the logic laid out perfectly. This is Naito's redemption, and Okada is defending his gate. Simple.
Well, it's Naito's getting his redemption, and it's here you are. It's crazy because we're 99% sure he's going to win, and we're looking forward to it because we want to see his moment. Because we're invested in his moment. His moment is, you know. And then on the other hand, you have Roman Reigns, who we're 99% sure is going to win it, and I don't care about his moment. I've seen it so many times. It's forced on me. It's not organic. It's the opposite.
Now, Mo, my question to you, if at what point in history has there been a Roman Reigns like this where they just would not let go and continue the coronation after coronation after coronation for the guy?
The closest I could think of is Lex Luger.
But
you know, I mean,
it's never been to this degree where Vince won't let go.
No, and it wasn't just Vince. I mean, that was Vince tried with Lex Luger and it didn't work out, and he, you know, but same thing in he never really worked out Lex Luger as being what he should have also in NWA, WCW, and they kept on trying with him as well.
Yeah.
So he's the closest guy to a guy who I just think like kept getting a push despite the fact that the audience said he's at an upper mid-card level for us, and they kept on saying, well, we want him to be a main eventer, and they kept trying and trying. And WWF tried, NWA, WCW tried over and over and over with him. But not the same. It's not the same in that this has been so consistent and so many years, like, there's been no break, whereas there's at least some breaks with Luger, and it was different companies, and you didn't build everything, like, you didn't sacrifice everybody else's storyline for his storyline. Like, they sacrifice everybody else's storyline.
Yeah.
In order to build up Brock to the point where he's going to be the one to finally beat Brock. Like, they sacrifice, you know, I mean, for instance, Braun Strowman. You could have argued if they weren't going to do what they were doing with Roman, that Braun Strowman should have beat Lesnar, and I think he should have.
Yeah.
You know? But they sacrifice his story because they were trying to get over the Roman story. And even Luger, they never did that.
Like, I look at it just from a booking standpoint, having AJ kicking out, and even Samoa Joe, both those guys kick out of at least one F5, I think would have helped kind of buy people into that match a bit more. But ultimately, you knew the result of that match already, and you didn't suspend that disbelief. When Roman kicks out, you're still not suspending that disbelief because we see it a mile away. We know it's coming.
Yeah.
And we don't care. At least, I do think Roman's getting some love right now from the crowd because of the Shield, and I think that's the sole reason why the Shield's back together. And me and Josh had talked about this. How big are you on the Shield? Is it one of the greatest fractions of all time in wrestling history?
Oh, God, no.
Because to me, it's not. And I think Josh had said it's kind of like when DX reunited for the first time. And for fans that grew up with them, it's like, oh, this is cool, DX. I remember these guys.
DX was a lot more years apart, though.
Yeah.
And a lot more storylines apart and everything. And they, you know, they weren't wrestling each other as often as we saw the Shield members wrestle each other and everything. So, yeah, I don't know. It's not – but they're not one of the greatest. They're – really good faction, but come on, they weren't together long enough, and
it's a new age thing.
And this isn't
with,
yeah.
I just because I see the Shield, and it's not like even when the Shield was together, I wasn't like, oh, I gotta watch the Shield. There's one guy I wanted to watch, and he had a beard, and he flew around the ring like a madman.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Shield's never been, holy crap, these guys are incredible. I bought in. And I think that's...
Well, one of the things that really hurts them when we talk about their legacy, when we talk about how great they are, was, remember, they had just finally turned babyface. They had a lot of legs left as a babyface faction.
Yeah.
They had faced as a babyface, they had faced the Wyatts, and then faced the Evolution. And then were split up, and they had a lot of legs as a baby. If they had kept that together for long term as a baby face faction, it'd be very different, I think.
Yeah.
But it wasn't long, and this doesn't feel like it's gonna be long either. So
no, it feels like they're gonna. I feel like they're building towards a Dean and Seth match at Mania.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And it's just like,
I don't know. I was the Shield even that over when they were together initially?
They were over. Yeah, I mean, when they took on Evolution and stuff.
I thought the Nexus at their pinnacle, at the very pinnacle of the Nexus, was more the Shield was, or am I crazy?
No, I think it's about the same. Yeah, I think you're. Yeah. I think that's legit.
The Nexus were big. Like they were a big deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wade Barrett was big. You know, yeah. I mean, Wade Barrett for a little while there. God, again, another guy. Just an example of how they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, that was. They should have put the belt on him. Like, I mean, everyone's heard the story with Edge and Jericho going to Cena at that SummerSlam. I was like, dude, this is just not smart. Like, put them over. Just put them over. And Cena has more or less now said he regrets that. But, you know, as soon as he did that and, they did the whole Cena's a slave or fired or whatever. Once it survived.
That was so, some of the very worst storytelling of all time. When John Cena comes out there and goes, I could finally spend time with, see my mom and get off. And then he's there at every show coming out of the audience the next week. Like, he's like, I'm finally going to get to go home. And well, at least that was funny. And the house show is Juan Cena, but still. Yeah.
The Shield hasn't really done anything like that, but I was joking with Joel. I'm like, you know why they call it the Shield mode? Because they're shielding Roman's heat.
Well, it's true. That's a good, that's a good line.
Yeah.
Yeah,
every once in a while, he has one.
Yeah, like I just, you see it, and it's kind of, it's like, oh, well, we like Roman because he's part of the Shield, so we'll root for him now.
Whose tweet did you steal that from?
I actually came up with it myself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, impressive, right? Once in a while.
Once every blue moon.
Yeah.
So, Joel, you said you had another topic you wanted us to hit.
And it's kind of leading into everything, because
I guess Josh did. It was Josh's topic.
Well, we both. This is why the pod was curated, was this topic. Because Joel and I have a disagreement on it, and I want to know your opinion on it. The Bucks and Cody self-financing the 10,000-seat arena. We don't know when it's going to happen. No company in the last two decades now. The last time that a company sold out a 10,000-seat arena that wasn't WWE, I believe, was WCW in 1999, according to Meltzer. Do you believe that they can sell out?
I do think Ring of Honor might have... with their baseball stadium thing, but I mean, that's a baseball,
right?
You know, the team is playing. I think they might have had 10,000 or something, so but that doesn't really count. Yeah, you're right.
Do you think for like a wrestling show like theirs, they can do 10,000? I personally don't think they can do 10. I think they can do about 7. I don't think they can sell out. I don't think they can sell 10,000 unless they got like Brian or Punk or something, which are both, you know, big extremes that happen. Let's say they don't get Brian or Punk, that this is just the Bucks getting Ring of Honor talent, maybe some Japan talent, to sell 10,000 seats. Do you think they can do it?
Okay. First off, that's your opinion. I want to hear.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
First.
Yeah.
I think that they can. I believe that they will get between 8 and 10. I think they will. There is potential for them to sell it out, just based on just how hot of a commodity they have become. Especially if you do it in a good city like a Chicago. Like, if you do it in a city that is smarky, that has a lot of those hardcore fans, because let's be honest, this isn't for the casual fans. This is for the hardcore fans. So if they do it right, I think they could do it. But again, you got to see, the one thing that we have to wait and see on is, how does the card look? Who do they have? If they book Okada and Omega, I think that changes the complexity of what the expectation is. Because if you're booking Okada and Omega, not to face each other, but to have them on that card, I think that puts a lot more emphasis.
Remember, too, if you're going to get Okada, you got to talk to Gato first. And we don't know if Gato would sign off on that or not.
No, and we don't. And that's the thing. There's a lot of variables up in the air. But I think if this is done right, they can do it. If it's,
because why would Japan want to give away their biggest match on a show that's not...
Well, they wouldn't. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm suggesting that they would book separately Kenny and book separately Okada.
Oh, okay. I thought you were suggesting number 4.
No, they would never do that. They'd be crazy. The Bucks would be crazy to suggest that. My thinking is, there's a very... If it's done right... there's potential. If it's not done right, then they might get half of that if they're lucky. But for me, I'm going to be the optimist and say that it's potentially that they can sell it.
Mo?
All right. Okay.
By the way, Mo getting an answer back from Dave Meltzer on Twitter this week.
Yeah. Well, you know what it was I was watching I was watching the news and I'm watching Trump at his, you know, press conference, and he's talking about the taxes, and Linda was there. And he's sitting there going, Linda McMahon, she's doing a fantastic job with small businesses. She's the perfect person for it. She took a small business and turned it into a big business, you know. And I'm sitting there thinking, so I was like, how much did Vince buy the WWF four from his dad? And it was $1 million, and which would be about, you know, $2.5 million now. And that was probably a deal because it's his son. So I'm sitting there going, to me, that's not a small business.
No.
You know? I was laughing because I was just like, man, how they play with facts and change these things. And I'm like, that's a load of crap. That's not a small business. Like, yeah, $2.5 million business, I'm not going to be able to buy it. Most people can't. That's a big business already. So anyway, so that's why I had asked him that, how much had he had purchased it for, and he did answer me. Nicely.
But as far as the 10,000 seats go.
So the 10,000 seats. Dave Meltzer, this whole thing started because somebody asked Dave Meltzer if Ring of Honor could do a 10,000 seat stadium, and he said no. And I think about it, and I'm like, yeah, probably not. I mean, I think 6,000 or something like that is about the max they've ever gotten to. It's, you know, about 6,500. And you're like, yeah, it's tough to imagine them doing a 10,000 seat stadium, and they have all the resources and a little more that the Bucks and Cody will have. But Bucks Cody might actually have a couple advantages. Now, you talk about Daniel Bryanson or Bryan Danielson.
Bryan Danielson.
I mean, if it's Bryan Danielson versus in his very first match after leaving WWE against Cody, I think that could draw 10,000 people. You know what I mean? Like, if you had a rematch, you talk about the names. You talked about Punk and Danielson. I think Jericho's the other one. Right. You know, I mean, Jericho versus Cody would be a big draw. Jericho versus a rematch against Omega. Omega versus Cody is a big draw. If you can get two or Punk against anybody, you know, if you could get two or three of those dream matches in any fashion, if you got Omega versus, if you got, say, Daniel Bryan versus Chris Jericho outside the WWE in his first match, and Cody versus Omega, that feels like it could draw 10,000 people to me. You know, so it's really difficult to say, but I think one thing that definitely hurts it is there's no dream matchup for the Bucks in the world right now outside of the WWE, and you're not going to have it outside.
The Usos and the Revival, and they
the
can't
Usos, the Revival, and the New Day.
Yeah,
you know, those are the three matches for the Bucks. There is not you have the only other dream match that was out there was the Hardys, and that's done.
Yeah.
So I think
have they
that
faced
really
War Machine
hurts.
At all yet?
Oh, they faced War Machine a bunch of times. Yeah, right, and they probably will before then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big, and even then, that's not the same. Like, that's a big, to me, a big negative on this is there's no dream match for the Young Bucks that exists that they can book.
Yeah, that's the thing that why I never understood. Like, I get where they're coming independently and the t-shirts and stuff. I just thought as far as a wrestling base, I didn't get why the Bucks signed the contracts Ring of Honor as long as they did. I get it as far as they're making so much money right now. And
oh, they're doing great.
Filled. It's just, their only players I can't think they're fully fulfilled is a great feud. That's why, like, coming to Tag Team of the Year, I'm struggling to make them the Tag Team of the Year because, unlike the Usos, for example, they really haven't had that feud.
There has been, they have in the past, but they've just gone through them.
Yeah.
And maybe if it was Daniel Bryan and Chris Jericho together versus the Bucks and Omega versus Cody, and you do that, I mean, I definitely think that would be huge. And maybe that could draw 10,000. So, I mean, there's ways maybe to do it, but it would almost have to be a dream team that you
put together. Well,
Beretta
and Chuck Taylor are kind of doing something, right? So maybe that's where they're going to go, maybe?
That's not, no, best friends are not, that's not a huge draw. I'm sorry. It's not, it has to be, it has CM Punk and Daniel Bryan versus the Young Bucks. Yeah, okay. You can do 20,000. Like, you know what I mean? But yeah, I don't know that.
And they face really different combination that Osprey's been in, even.
Yeah, like all that's just not fresh. Yeah. It has to be a guy that's a true draw, two draws put together. Even Ospreay, and say you did Ospreay and Daniel Bryan, even that I don't know that it would. It has to be two guys like that if you want to make that match for the Bucks.
Right.
And so that's kind
of where I come from. It's like they can't go with anyone they just have from Ring of Honor. No. They have a lot of big ifs. Like,
I do believe that that Daniel Bryan is going to end up wrestling for the WWE again. I think when push comes to shove, I think that they're going to sit there and go, if this guy leaves and goes to New Japan, the gap that's so wide gets cut in like half.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just think that there's too much momentum from the small companies, the Ring of Honors and the New Japans. The WWE can't afford to let it happen. So I don't think they will let it happen.
Like, Jericho's not a big one for them. Like, go. It's like, okay, whatever. We'll let Chris go. Like, you saw the Christmas ads that had Jericho Funko Pops and scarves. So they're obviously not really carrying the Jericho.
Oh, when they're doing the, and by the way, the best thing on Raw, and then how funny is this, is probably the Good Brothers hawking the shit.
Terrific.
But yeah, in the background, whose shirt do you see? Chris Jericho's.
Yeah.
You know, shirt is in the background.
Yeah, the Funko Pop this week as well, and the scarf.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, so that's a guy they could get, but again, I don't know if it comes to something like that. Like, I think his loyalty still is with Vince, and I don't think Vince looks as Japan as much as a threat because you look at him letting
If it's a one time, show like this, maybe that would be all right.
He even let JR do Access again. Like, JR confirmed, like, he talked to Vince about doing Access, and Vince is like, sure, I don't care.
Yeah.
So Vince doesn't obviously see them as that big of a threat, but you're right. If they get Daniel Bryan, then it's like, that's not a good thing for us.
And Daniel Bryan ultimately would probably be better off leaving because, you know, he'd make good money and he'd have way more creativity.
But how much does he want to leave his new?
That's the thing, right? I mean,
he's going to leave Birdie.
He's going to be very, very, very loyal because he feels like the company has been good to him. So.
Yeah, like that maternity leave, I didn't think that would be such a big deal to him, but it really was.
Yeah, really.
And then I guess, like, too, like, you know, him and Brie have had this thing about being there for Birdie, and he doesn't, I don't think he wants to, and I think he kind of, as silly as it sounds, I think he likes the total Bellas and Divas experience to a degree.
Well, that's another reason why I don't think they'll let him go. Honestly, could they do those shows without him? Yeah.
Yeah, but he's one of the best parts about it.
It would be so awkward, and I just... Those shows make them money. They're profitable. Yep. I don't think they want to lose them from those shows. I think that's...
Well, Brie even said, too, like, she said...
And Brie's going to wrestle again, by the way, too.
Of course. Brie has mentioned, too, she said, with Brian's depression, she's like, he has admitted that being on Total Bellas and talking about his depression in front of the cameras, he didn't think would be as therapeutic as it was for him.
Yeah.
And he's like, and it helped him to get his message about what he wants and stuff out on those shows. So that's a paycheck that he could have. But I mean, Brian could also go on the indies and just kill it on the merch. And Brie could go on the indies and kill it on the merch herself. They have Birdie B already. Her and Nikki went and did independent stuff. They would be just fine.
Oh, they'd make incredible money.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, if I'm going to lay odds of it, everything has to come together. Everything has to come together perfectly.
Yeah,
and the odds of everything coming together perfectly are long. So,
and let's also not forget who Daniel Bryan's soon-to-be brother-in-law is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say, you know, what 33% chance that they could get, maybe not even that. Probably 33% they could get 8,000. 25% they can get 10,000. It seems like long odds, and you know, but then again, if they have 5,000, they'll make a bunch of money. Like, that's the thing that, you know, they'd make a huge amount of money at 5,000 because they're going to sell so much merch. If they have 5,000, they're going to sell, you know, 20,000 different shirts and things. Like,
and hey,
people are going to be buying like 3-4 shirts ahead, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you go into Hot Topic, the first three things you see now are Rick and Morty, Bullet Club, and Harry Potter.
Well, yeah.
Pretty crazy to see it next to the biggest animated show, arguably right now, and one of the biggest properties ever.
Didn't the Bucks just outsell Rick and Morty for the first time?
Yeah, they did during Black Friday. They were the best selling tea on Hot Topic.
Amazing. And they just
they're never going to the WWE ever.
They just reviewed their Funko Pops. That will be out later next year. Mm-hmm. So, independent wrestlers having Funko Pops. Like, I've got Funko Pops of Macho Man, Austin, Rock, Punk, Brian, KO, AJ, Sean, Johnny Gaudreau, Walter White, Spider-Man, and the Young Bucks are a big enough name to have Funko Pops.
It's incredibly impressive, really. Incredibly impressive.
I guess tied in with this, the 10,000 is the announcement or the at least the talk about that they're going to be releasing a Ring of Honor streaming service. And I haven't gotten your take on it, Mo. What do you think of Ring of Honor announcing something like this?
A tree falls in the forest. Is anybody here? Like, do you know anybody who has talked about TNA's streaming service?
Nope.
Like,
I mean, I will say, Ring of Honor got it. If it was an Apple TV and it was $5, I'd get it.
Well, I mean, I suppose if you could do something where it ties in with the New Japan world,
yes,
I think that would be very interesting. Oh. Maybe it was like $15 and you got both.
That's my biggest complaint about New Japan World is, you know, it's, I go and watch, like, luckily Joel and I share his New Japan, he lets me share his New Japan account, but it's hard to sometimes just go and just watch on your laptop when it's so much easier if you're going to watch the network, for example, you could just go on your Apple TV and watch it, or your PlayStation and watch it, and I would love to have that ability to have that with New Japan World.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. That's my biggest thing, having to watch on the PC or the phone.
Yeah.
You know, instead of on my TV, I want to watch on my TV.
Yeah.
I have an awesome TV, I want to use my awesome TV. Thank you. All right, what's wrong with that? Get on there, guys.
That's what I agree with you. I mean, even if I want to watch Botchamania, I just go and watch it on Daily Motion. How you can watch some New Japan stuff the next day. That's why I watch some Super Junior stuff. It's on Daily Motion the next day.
Yep.
But Japan's doing a good job. I'd like to give them my money because they've earned it. They've worked their way to have some of the best wrestling this year. Like, this is one of the best years for as far as match quality this year, and I don't think WWE is in the top 10 aside from maybe an AJ and Cena match.
Well, I mean, the best WWE match is still Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne, and, you know, that's two guys not trained by the WWE.
No, and then, you know, what do you think the best on the main roster was this year?
I would still go Cena and AJ at the Rumble.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
I really liked Stroh and Roman. That was good. I don't think it's my match of the year like it was Peter Rosenberg's, but I digress.
Yeah. But no, it's, what were we talking about right before this? Oh, man.
The Ring of Honor streaming service.
Oh, yeah, the Ring of Honor streaming service. Yeah, if they could do something with New Japan, but if it's just, I know they have a lot of really, really good content. Like to be able to go back and watch AJ Styles, you know, really, 12 years ago, or Daniel Bryan or Loki, and see how awesome he was. Like, that would be really cool. I would really enjoy that. Yeah. But it's such a niche or market that you're aiming at, that
that's what I'm worried about, the 10,000 seats.
Yeah,
because as much as we're seeing this stuff explode and it's awesome, and we haven't seen our company or our individuals like the Bucks and the Bullet Club are doing outside of WWE, you got to remember, it's like I said off air about Justice League, we are wrestling fans, so we're feeling this a lot more. How are those non-fans dealing when they go into Hot Topic? Are they saying, oh, this is cool, what is the Bullet Club, I'm interested in buying the shirt, or are they just walking by it?
I think some people, a little bit of both probably, but again, it's the streaming service thing. Like, what's the, like, Flow Slam didn't work.
Definitely didn't work. The price definitely hurt Flow Slam. That was a major thing that hurt it.
You know, but it's done. NWA slash... like NWA had a service that was, it was Houston Wrestling, that type of thing that you know, I mean, nobody bought it, and they had good matches. They had, you know, your Terry Taylor versus Ric Flair's and all this type of stuff. They had a bunch of really good matches, but nobody, I don't know anybody that got it, and I don't know if it still exists. And this was probably a little over a year ago.
Do you think, you know, WWE has these weird polls once in a while, and then, you know, TNA and Ring of Honor show up, and everyone gets super excited, and then it calms down. Do you think, like, much in a way, like, an ESPN makes deals with certain conferences in football, but, you know, the conferences still maintain their money, would it be beneficial to some of these companies to try to break a deal with the WWE?
Absolutely. To be like, it'd be great for both sides.
Ring of Honor, you will still get your profile, but we get your tape library. So when we do AJ Styles DVDs, we have AJ Styles to show matches on the DVDs of that, and we're going to get that. I think that's the way you kind of work it. You can't do an AJ Styles documentary now without TNA and Ring of Honor, same with Joe, for example. But you can broker a deal, but like, okay, you can stream your stuff, and we'll give you profit for this and this, but when it comes to the DVDs and stuff, and greatest matches, we're going to do this and whatnot. There's got to be some kind of breakdown.
Yeah, I mean, it would be good for both sides. But again, it's like if WWE did that, if WWE, say, added Ring of Honor, right now if they have 1.5 million subscribers, a year from now, don't you think they'd probably have 1.5 million subscribers?
Like, because you're not selling them on the Ring of Honor library. It's like having, like, I've had friends like, that were like,
you and me. You'd make the existing fans you have that are already buying your service happier.
Yeah.
And I would love it, and that would be great. I want one. I really would love it if we had one streaming service that was like, you know. But even Netflix is going to fracture now. It's going to fracture into, you know, like CBS is starting their own and Disney starting their own.
Once this Disney thing is official, then yeah, it's like, going to just blow up.
You're going to be going to Netflix more for their original series than you are for things like if you want to watch Star Wars and the Disney movies, well, then you're going to be going over to that.
And all you're
going
to have left on Netflix, and Joel, we're talking about, is just with if this Fox merger does happen, which it seems it's about to, all you're going to have left as far as stuff is NBC Universal, because they're not going to be able to have CBS, they're not going to have ABC, and they're not going to be able to have the Fox show. So those are all gone. All those properties are gone.
And so you're going to be left with the original series of basically being all that they can put out there, like their original programming, which is really good, and I think it'll be enough. And they have, you know, enough subscribers, they're fine.
They're a name.
But the point is, though, I mean, like, we're going to see – there's going to be a day and age where that's what we're going to be seeing here is, you know, like, there's going to be 50 streaming services, and you're probably going to be subscribing to 20, and you're going to be spending the same amount as you're spending on television, but television won't be existing anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be one for hockey and sports, and there'll be one for – like, and that's the future. And so it'd be nice if there was wrestling – if wrestling's ahead of the game on this, it'd be nice if wrestling had, one service that had everything on it.
I think the network's done a really good job, too, like of the library and everything. And just to have, you know, like, I mean, I'd love to have Stampede Wrestling and Memphis, but obviously there's some mixed bag with those two properties for them.
Well, again, it's they have all this stuff, and they do they put out all the old stuff the way they want to? No. Do they put out all, you know, WWF superstars the way I wish they would, or you know, some of the old, like you say, Stampede Wrestling and you know, World Class, like they put out some at the beginning and then they don't put out much. But the fact is, at the end of the day, people don't watch those. Like, people don't watch those things. So do you blame them for not doing it?
Not really. I mean, would you and I get excited for Stampede? And hearing some Ed Whalen, of course.
Sure.
I'd love to see Memphis to see some full Andy Kaufman stuff, because I've never seen the Andy Kaufman stuff aside from Man on the Moon and just some YouTube clips here and there. I'd love to see
that. Dude, I got to watch that. I can't wait to watch that one with...
He is an asshole to Lawler. He is an asshole to Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler loses his mind. By the way, rare appearance by the Cat, Stacy Carter.
Really?
Yeah, but... It'd be very interesting. I would. It depends on the price too, right? Like, how much are you going to charge for a Ring of Honor streaming service?
Everybody seems to want to charge 10, but if WWE is giving me a $10 service that gives me 1 to 2 pay per views a month, and that has an incredible backlog of product, and you're giving me, Ring of Honor. What the current weekly show and just a backlog? Like, I don't think we'll be getting the pay per views.
Yeah, I don't. That's the big question. By the way, I forgot my point there. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. Yeah, but just so I think, like, I just don't see how it could work. $5 maybe, but $10 is just, that's too much to ask. You're not giving me enough content.
And remember, too, like, they've had a lot of problem in the past streaming their pay-per-views in the first place. And WWE has the backing of MLB, which is one of the best streaming services in the world. Yeah, they have a really good streaming. But I've rarely had multiple problems with the network. I don't understand with the network, though. Not on their fault. They released, during Survivor Series, they had this thing where you could just get the network just to watch Survivor Series for $20 or whatever, or $25, why would you do that? I still don't understand why people are still buying the pay-per-views.
Well, some people have to buy the pay-per-views because the pay-per-views actually went up this year. That's hilarious. Don't get me wrong. But the pay-per-views went up. Like, they're offering all these really good pay-per-views. You know, they're offering, like, Joe versus Brock. So what does it do? It makes people order more pay-per-views. And some people, like I say, they don't have the technology or the infrastructure and where they live to, you know, if you're in a rural area, you're not going to be able to really use the network. But so you're going to be ordering something like that on pay-per-view. But, yeah, it's that one. I don't think anybody gets that. Order, you get for $20, you get the network for 3 days. You have access to the full network and you get the pay-per-view, but you only have it for 3 days. But it's costing you $20. So it's like, what?
By the way, I have some breaking news about CM Punk.
Oh, yeah?
He was backstage at the UFC tonight, and he was sitting in a chair, and it broke, and everyone laughed at him, and now everyone's saying Punk is 0-2 in the UFC. I don't know. I just found that amusing.
That's amusing, or Mo's laugh is more amusing?
That's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
But I heard that him and Dana White were having a meeting, so...
Yeah, Dana, can I go to New Japan, please? I need to make money again.
I hope that's it. Oh, that'd be great. Oh, man, that's funny. All right, well, anything else, gentlemen?
I think that's a good note to go out on. I don't know.
Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega?
Oh, yeah. Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. Yeah, yeah. The North American main event, as we'll call it.
Huh. Yeah. Winnipeg, you idiots.
Go back to Toronto. I'm from Winnipeg, you idiots. Yes, in case people don't know that, just look it up. Just Google it.
Well, just in case we don't get a chance to talk about that whole card, what do you guys think about the way the card's been set up and all that?
New Japan booking is pretty much flawless, and so is this.
Yep.
You know, what else can you say? Like, the booking is so incredible. Always is.
Would I like to see Kenny and Ibushi almost kill each other? Yeah, but this is this is equally fine with me. Can Jericho go like he used to? No. Will he be able to work the New Japan style? We're going to find out, but it's going to be fun to watch anyways. And seeing Jericho wrestling on something that's not produced by Vince, it's going to be very weird, but it's going to be really fun.
Omega will take the bumps necessary to get that match over to the level it needs to get over. He'll take the crazy shit, and then they'll tell a story, and it will be awesome.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, Ibushi versus Omega be great, but it's going to happen again. So, you know, there'll be a chance. There'll be another chance. This is a one-time special thing. And it's going to be huge for New Japan, for pushing New Japan World in North America, undoubtedly. And I think we could see Mike Smith getting pulled.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, God, that's a rough one.
Oh. Collective sigh in Alberta.
Well, Southern Alberta. Northern Alberta is pretty happy.
Yeah, but their season's not going that well, so.
No, that's true.
Off topic.
Off topic, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll cut there. It's good to catch up on everything, and hopefully we get one more pot in before the holiday season fully gets in swing, and then it'll be the year-end rewards.
I will have a lot of time around the holidays off, so I'll certainly be available if you guys want to talk. And a year-end awards, I mean, I wanted to start bringing up some of it now, like you brought up your worst wrestler. And yeah, I mean, I wanted to, because it's going to be a lot of fun. It's the best in-year wrestling I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
And so, yeah.
The wrestler of the year, like you said, AJ's had a nice comeback, but I feel like that's a two-man race.
It's a one-man race still.
Yeah. I think Kenny's made a little bit of a point at the end here, but I think I would agree with you. And then the worst wrestler of the year, I think, is a two-man race as well, for different reasons for both of them. One, just being
I know the wrestler.
Yeah. One is just a terrible wrestler, and one has just been in terrible things.
What I know, who's the one who you think is besides? How can I not? Okay, I know where you're going. Yeah, with it.
There's two.
He's also being in terrible things.
Yeah,
racist things.
Yeah. It's hard, man. It's not a Sophie's choice. It's a Sophie's choice of who do I want to shit on more. I'm actually more excited to talk about the worst wrestler of the year than the wrestler of the year, to be completely honest.
It'll be fun.
Because they've just, both of those, the individuals that are nominated have been, made me so miserable.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to slamming both of them.
Well, and again, a year ago, I would have said the WWE product was like a 4.5 out of 10. Like, I was not high on it. And they were doing things like bringing back the cruiserweights, and you guys were seeing all the positives from it. I was like, but you realize they'll fuck it up. And what has happened 1 year later?
Yeah.
What? Say it. Say it.
It's not great.
That's not what you
They
you
fucked it up.
Thank you.
There's some shining points, like, but then there's things like, I see Mustafa Ali have a tremendous match here and there, and it's like, maybe we should utilize Mustafa Ali. Nope, we're not going to use him. Hey, Jack Gallagher's kind of get over with the friends. Fuck it, he's going heel.
So, say it.
They fucked up.
Thank you.
Maybe Hideo Tommy will help.
So I want you to, and now you guys finally have the attitude you're supposed to have. That there's guys end up in like Velveteen Dream that you're like, they're doing great. Please never go to the main roster. Why? Because they'll do what, guys?
Fuck it up.
Joel?
Oh, fuck it up.
Am I wrong?
Who came from NXT, by the way, really quickly, women or men, that have been better there or at least equal than are now?
There were people that weren't stars. Like Alexa Bliss is much... I don't understand the whole... Like, we'll probably get into this when we talk about the year-end awards, but I mean, I don't understand their love for Alexa Bliss, personally. But...
She's good at talking.
She's the queen of the 2.5-star match.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a match that's better than 2.75. I don't think I've ever seen one worse than 2.25. She's the queen of the 2.5-star match.
Well, her and Carmella have probably done better, aside from maybe Charlotte on the main roster, than most women. Like, Sasha's in the middle.
I think, yeah, Sasha's in the middle. Like, Alexis Bliss. But again, it's like, they weren't a star.
How did they fuck up Bayley, by the way? Just really quick, how do you fuck up Bayley?
This is why I was saying to you,
I thought there was no chance you could mess that up. Like, I thought that was female John Cena. That was easy. That was a give me. That was a layup.
Yes!
Like, I don't understand how they messed that one up. Like, I don't get it.
Because they can fuck up anything. And this is the problem we have. Like, you can enjoy moments, but...
Good Brothers I knew would be whatever. I wasn't... That's not too shocking to me. But Bayley, I was like, how? There's no way they can mess Bayley up. It'll work.
When I think of somebody that they created in NXT... that was there for a long time and was a star there, that they brought up, that has continued to be a star, I can't really think of anybody. Like, Kevin Owens doesn't count because he wasn't there that long.
Yeah.
No, but Joe doesn't count either because he wasn't there. Like, he was there a long time, but he was the exact same guy he was in TNA.
Charlotte.
Okay, Charlotte's not doing... I don't know if Charlotte's doing better, but she's probably. Okay, Charlotte. Charlotte's their creation all around. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Nakamura, no. Finn, no. Bobby Roode, no.
And it doesn't even count. Like I say, I'm looking for a guy that they created that got to be a star there. Not that there's really many of them.
Well, Rusev kind of was on the trend there, but not anymore. Lana, for a degree there, she fell off now as well.
There's people that get better on the main roster.
I mean, you can technically say, I mean, Hunter will take credit for Braun, Seth. But I don't know if like
Braun got better because this is almost my point is, like, Braun was the shits when he brought up and he was never really on NXT TV.
No, you know, he was a Rosebud actually. That was it.
Yeah, exactly. And he was the shits. Yeah. So he's gotten much better, like, you know. So in many ways, the training in WWE, just the fact that you're working all the time with good people. Is better than the training in NXT in a lot of ways.
Actually, since you're bringing this point up, and this will be the last point, then we'll get out of here. The two women groups. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh God, well, I don't like it at all.
Well, because I don't mind the Paige one. I've been high on Sonya Deville. Her promo was shit. It was not good. Paige's promo wasn't even that good. I'm very high on Mandy Rose. I definitely think there's a future for her because she does all the things they want. She's Eva Marie that can wrestle a little bit better. The SmackDown group is interesting. I've been on the fence about Ruby Riott. I've never been a huge fan of hers. I think she's done okay so far. Sarah Logan I don't know as much about, aside from the Mae Young Classic. But Liv Morgan as a heel makes zero sense.
Okay, so here's my thinking on it. Well, here's what I like. I like the fact that all of a sudden you have Ruby Riott and Sonya Deville and Sarah Logan. And the idea that we are in the women's wrestling and in the revolution instead of evolution as it is now or whatever they're calling it, or they've reversed it or whatever. But the idea that we have these people that would never have made the roster with this look 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Oh, there's no chance Ruby would have.
And that's a positive. So I
Liv Morgan, 100%.
Well, yeah, of course. Liv Morgan's a gorgeous girl. But,
yeah.
But you know, Mandy Rose is a gorgeous girl. But the fact that they have some diversity in the look, they usually, in the past, they'd say, we can have one like that, but we can't have two or three that like that. And actually, Sarah Logan's a lot better looking than you'd realize if you ever put her in some good clothes or whatever. But still, like, that's a really positive thing. Like, I'm really happy about that. It's the angle and the different things. Like, number one, it's the same thing as that. Why do they do this? Somebody's gone and they come back and they're over as a baby face. Don't turn them heel right away. It didn't work with Seth Rollins. It took him forever to overcome it. And it's a dumb thing to do with Paige.
Yeah.
Don't do it right there.
Especially since she's been through hell. She was in an abusive relationship with a piece of shit named Alberto Del Rio.
Oh, you guys gotta listen to just drop Conan's interview, part one and part two, only next week on the Keeping 100 podcast with Alberto Del Rio. He talks a lot about him and Paige and those rumors. It's very interesting.
What is he? Does he say that she hit him?
Oh, I'm not going to spoil it for you, really. I want you to listen to it. I want to
get. I'm just opinion. Going from what I've.
But let's just say, that he says that he protected her because things that were said. He made sure they were said about him, not her, because she could get fired so easily and lose her job. If that makes any sense.
Right. And not just that, just the stuff on the tapes, and we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, this is a woman you should not have turned.
No.
Where they did. It's stupid.
Unless she has a movie coming out led by the biggest movie star in Hollywood.
Yeah. A dumb thing to do. So that's my one. That's my first thing. And then they're 50% the NWO, 50% the Shield. They surround the ring like the Shield. There's no originality there. You're with us or you're against us. Come join us like the NWO. There's no originality down there. It's shitty booking. So then they do the exact same fucking angle on SmackDown.
And I'm if like, you did it on Ramo, you could make an excuse like, well, that's who she had for Tough Enough for those two contestants. You could make that excuse. But doing it on SmackDown makes zero sense.
Well, the thing is, you could do this on SmackDown, okay? And Ruby Riott and Sonya Deville, meanwhile, are wrestling a takeover, and it's on TV and, you know, in the pre-show. And now they're having another match next week on NXT. And it's like, I was like, too bad, because I'm like, well, who cares about that? I'm like, if this is – because they're so similar, if you have some really creative idea that's tying in these two storylines of these two three-woman teams attacking the exact same way, like, this could be really cool. You could do something. And by week two, it's obvious that's not happening. And now I'm just like, well, it's just shit. Because it's just, it just happens to happen, you know? It's like, it's not good storytelling.
Well, so we need new women, but we don't want to use Billie Kay and Peyton yet. Thank God Billie Kay and Peyton were used in these, because they are way better deserving of that.
Oh, so, totally. But,
yeah.
So you have people that are, I don't know, some are ready, some are not.
And by the way, I'm just going to say this now. Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, they're going to fuck it up.
Oh, you think?
Like, Peyton Royce is another can't miss to me, and they're going to fuck it up.
Absolutely.
Asuka, probably going to. They've done okay so far. I'm actually pretty surprised. There was a rumor going around today.
They started off bad. They're getting a little better.
What do you think about the rumor that was going around today? And I haven't asked Joel about this, about Ronda's opponent. you know, at first the rumor was a little bit Charlotte. There was a rumor going around today that they would debate having her go against Ronda, but Ronda would beat her.
Well, if they do that, that's the dumbest thing they could do.
Like, I get it from a
business. I thought they were going to do a four horsewoman versus the four horsewoman.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, at one point, apparently, according to what Joel has told me, they were going to make Ellsworth a transvestite and have him face Charlotte.
Yeah, well, I could see that.
Yeah, I could too. That's a scary thing.
It's Vince McMahon.
By the way, really, really, really quickly, so we are about five.
How many really quicklies have you been through?
Way too many. Take a drink. It's been a while. Joel and I always like to finish wrestling podcasts around this time of the year and just look at the four or five matches that we think as WrestleMania nears that we're going to get. So what matches collectively do you guys think that we are on the path for? I think we can agree on Brock and Roman, AJ and Nakamura, and then where do we go from there?
Hunter and Braun, Kurt and Jason Jordan, and...
Cena and Jinder?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about... I don't know. Maybe.
Do you think Jinder is going to be done by then?
I don't know. I don't know that he'll have any heat by then.
I think we're getting Cena and Joe at WrestleMania.
Cena wants to work with him.
Yeah.
Here's what we're getting, guys. And I've told Josh this. I'm going to tell you this, Mo. This is what's going to happen. Jinder's going to beat AJ for the title. Then Jinder's going to drop the title to Hunter in India. Then it's going to be a build-up. They'll find a way to get Hunter to 16, and it'll be Hunter and Cena for whoever passes Ric Flair. That's the main event.
So they're going
to
get 22 titles then? Because that's the actual number?
Like I said, I like the idea. You also throw in Orton, get him a couple more wins in there, and let's have a three-way for who get rid of the three of them. I never need to see Hunter Russell again, by the way. This became obvious to me at Survivor Series. I can't think of the last time he had better than a three-star match, probably against Daniel Bryan.
That match was pretty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't the best part of WrestleMania. It was, it was
three stars.
It
wasn't as good as the build. It was three stars. Like, he can't do much. He never has. Like, he's just a big jacked-up steroid freak. Thank you. He can't move. He doesn't move very well. I never need to. He's boring to me. His style is out of date. Like, I never need to see him, frankly.
I really prefer Paul Levesque, the businessman, than Hunter Hurst Helmsley, the wrestler, at this point.
My role for him is what he does when he shows up at like an NXT after a tournament or like a Mae Young Classic and presents the award. That's a great role for him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's awesome at that. That's all I need out of him. I don't need.
By the way, do you think he gets too much credit for finding the talent? Is it more Regal than him? I've had this debate with Joel. Like, I think it's Regal that's really finding the talent, and Hunter's getting more of the credit.
I wouldn't call it a debate. I wouldn't say I'm arguing.
No, you never disagree with me. You and I have agreed on that. I'm just asking Mo.
It's who put Regal in that position? He did. Hunter.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he deserves that talent if he chose the right guy. I mean, that's, so he deserves that credit. Regal doesn't get enough credit, but I don't think that Hunter's getting too much.
No. I mean, Hunter's the booker, ultimately, and he's proved to be a better booker than the guy that does the main show, so.
Exactly. But, I never need to see him, and I never see, Stephanie comes out after being gone for months, and within 30 seconds before she even talks, you're already bored. I'm trying to think of what's the one. Give me the best, most. Like, we talk about being a good promo, and good promo means that you entertain people, and WWE has forgotten that. They think a good promo means that you don't forget your lines and you deliver it with some sort of she delivers it. She delivers her lines with confidence.
Yes,
but. Give me, when have you ever been entertained by her?
No.
By a promo she's given. Ever?
Steph?
Yeah.
I did like her mocking of Punk last holiday. That was funny.
She had a good line reacting to the audience.
Yeah. That's she's probably been working on that for like months.
That's not the same as delivering a good promo. She doesn't. Not, very few people do. Yeah. But I'm like, I never need to see her on TV again.
Well, when's the last time Shane gave a good promo? I'll say that as well.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a whole other freaking mess.
I look at a point like that where you talk about Shane and Stephanie, and then you look at like Brian's promo when he was AJ's advocate.
Yeah.
Nice, simple, entertained, got me hyped, all I needed.
And Paul Heyman promos, they entertain you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Stephanie never entertains you with a promo. So they've forgotten what so they don't get it.
Not to try to make this a battle of the sexes here, but overall, like, in the entire women division, who really cuts a good promo?
I like Becky Lynch. I think she cuts a good promo.
Bliss does, to a degree. Lana.
Bliss is... I don't know. It's not entertaining. It's more, she doesn't forget her lines and she has confidence doing it. But it's not a good promo to me.
Yeah, well, Lana.
I think Lana's far more entertaining.
Who is a terrible promo is Natty.
Oh, awful.
Natty annoys the shit out of me when she does.
Especially in the, but it's not just the, it's the acting backstage.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Holy shit. A lot of them are bad, but Natty is...
Because on Total Divas this week, Lana called her out for it, and she was like, "I'm not that bad," and everyone just was kind of quiet. You had a good laugh. Like Carmella is a better actor than actress than she is.
Yeah, she's a horrible actress. Horrible.
Like, just the way she delivers her lines, it's just so bad. Charlotte's not any better.
The writing's so shitty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who is it that I can't remember who it was? It was backstage. It was Naomi.
Yeah,
and Naomi's talking to
the hairdresser,
Charlotte. No, she's talking to Charlotte this week, right?
Yeah.
And she goes, last week when I was attacked by Sarah Logan, Sonya, Ruby Riott, and Liv Morgan. And I'm like, nobody ever says that.
No.
Like, people, you don't talk like that.
If it was like, normal, it was like, those bitches attacked me last week.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. You say, when those girls attacked me.
Yeah.
You know, and then the announcers are supposed to sit there. The girls they're talking about were blah blah blah, and they fill that in or something. Or somebody else says, "What girls? I didn't see last week." And then they say, "These people." Like, there has to be some reason, but it has to be a natural way of speaking, a natural way of writing. Like, I know you got to get their names out there, but that's just so phony. I never sit there and say to people, "Tomorrow, I'm not going to sit there and go." Last night, I did a podcast with Joel Johnson and Josh Arbit. However, the fuck your name is said.
Good job.
But I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's gonna say that. I'll say I talked to Joel and Josh, or I'll say I talked to those two assholes. Like that's how you talk.
Yeah.
And so this is the type of shit that just drives me crazy.
I would agree with you. I needed to make that Natty point because it's been something that it's just X-Pac level for me whenever she's on. It's just it's nails on a chalkboard right now watching me do her do a promo or anything. Even talking smack, she annoyed me, which is a lot.
Yeah, and that's where somebody hasn't written for her.
Naomi was bad on talking smack, too. I never got the whole Naomi thing. It was never really... I think she's got a really cool entrance. Never really got the Naomi thing. I just never really got why she got the title. When there's someone like Becky Lynch that has just been put such in a back burner, I don't understand why.
I agree. I know what you're saying.
That's another female wasted is Becky Lynch right now.
Yeah, she's like not buried, but she's also not relevant, you know?
No. I don't remember the last time Becky was really relevant. I mean, she was the captain for Survivor Series, and then it was like
and then she's pinned right away.
Yeah, I've seen more Alicia Fox on TV this year that feel than Becky Lynch.
Oh, Alicia Fox. That's worse than Natty.
I wonder if we'll get a repeat winner from you this year in that category.
Oh.
For Miss Fox.
Oh, well, the Noam Dar stuff.
Yeah.
Can she qualify for worst wrestler for that, too?
Of course.
We're talking about worst wrestler, and you say two-man race, and then I just remembered Enzo.
Yeah. The thing with Enzo is it's a polarizing subject because is he not a good wrestler? Yes. Do I agree that he is helping the cruiserweight division get eyes and you care about it? I see it. I get the decision for it. I don't like it, but I get the decision.
Again, it's well.
I'm not a fan of it. I'd rather see Hideo face Adrian Neville. I'd rather those be the matches that we're going to get. But maybe we will eventually. But I'd rather see Mustafa Ali, who I think may be my most underutilized wrestler in the company this year. There's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of them. But I get the Enzo thing to a degree. It's trying to get eyes in it, but I think now you've gotten the eyes more in the product, you don't need him to necessarily have the title.
Yeah.
And they're just blowing things off. Like, the Kalisto thing is already done, realistically. Like, maybe whoever wins these triple threat matches they're going to have, maybe it will be Kalisto, I don't know. But after that, it's going to be Hideo's turn, and I really don't want to see Hideo Itami, Kenta, one of the greatest wrestlers of these past two decades, face Enzo Amore.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the generation, you know, I mean, he's of that generation. Also, he probably should be talking about the Japanese best performers, him and Mayor Fuji, with two other people that we should have brought up, and you know, in the discussion. Like, those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, I mean, there's you just look at that division, and it doesn't feel like there's any. It doesn't feel like there's any hope for the.
There's so much talent there too, because you look at Cedric Alexander. You look at possibly Neville returning. You look
if they do this Facebook show.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen to it. I don't know if they're going to keep it are they going to tape beforehand?
Joel, you had mentioned you knew the plan for this.
I'd read somewhere that the plan was going to be it was like a mishmash of different
Robert's. But is the 205 Live going to be filmed at the start and the Facebook?
Yeah, 205 would be filmed at the start. They do SmackDown and then they would do this this mixed tag team, like they have different tag.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, I just was like, okay, well.
I understand getting on Facebook, I understand, but you're already stretched so thin. I mean, the truth is, you need three nights already.
They do.
You need three nights to.
And also, NXT is going to be on the USA Network, I think it's in 2 weeks, because they're having a WWE week with Tribute to the Troops. I don't know if they put NXT on the USA Network before. And if I wonder if that's a test to see what NXT does.
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Like, I wonder if they're like...
They were on Sci-Fi before, and they were never on...
Yeah.
And they were originally on Sci-Fi before SmackDown. So, yeah, I mean, they've never been on USA.
Yeah, so because it's going to go Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and then Tribute to the Troops. Tribute to the Troops will do whatever. But I wonder if USA is like... I want to see what NXT does. And I think the more interesting note, too, is I think they're about a year and a half away from the contracts running out. And I think that's why this Facebook thing is such an interesting thing, because you're going to start looking of when is Amazon and Facebook going to start buying IPs and start getting into that market. And I know that they have kind of circled the NFL to a degree, and that's obviously a bigger dog than the WWE. And I know UFC is coming up, and that's something they've circled. So you got to wonder, when will Amazon and Facebook be like, okay, let's start doing our own thing and get into some of these IPs?
You know, Amazon is the one I've heard for WWE, but obviously then this Facebook thing comes up.
Yeah.
The idea of this is, you know, the idea of Raw on Facebook is fascinating.
It's very fascinating.
It could potentially actually reach more people. It's amazing to think of.
It could easily.
It's crazy, but... I don't know if it's this time, but if it wasn't for, like, this is probably why they want this. You're right. It's leverage for the contract, because the fact is that if they were looking at networks outside of the USA Network, I don't think they would have any.
Maybe ESPN, but I doubt it.
I don't think so. I don't think they would have anybody else who'd be interested.
Like, I look at their working relationships right now. So they have a working relationship with Bill Simmons and The Ringer. He's connected to HBO, but HBO's not going to put it on, right? And The Ringer doesn't have its own network, right? So they're not going to do anything with The Ringer. Then they have the connection with Coachman and Beadle with ESPN. But like you said, I don't think they'll air it on ESPN.
And Coachman, so then where left. Do you go?
Did he?
Yeah, that's the last thing I heard, that he left ESPN.
Oh, when did that happen?
I think a couple weeks ago.
So you got married that? Head? Did he leave, not. Or did he, or is he one of the guys that got fired because they fired all those employees?
He may have been one of the guys.
Yeah, they're bleeding money.
Yeah. No one cares about SportsCenter anymore, because every SportsCenter and Sports Desk are all irrelevant.
Yeah.
He, at least according to Wikipedia, at the very least, he's still with ESPN. But he could be one of those guys.
There's an article just below the Wikipedia that says he's left ESPN, and he's doing a Periscope show for now.
Where's that one?
That is... just Google it. Google Jonathan Coachman, Coachman ESPN, and you're going to see a bunch of stories about him leaving from wrestling, a bunch of the wrestling sites.
Oh, he has left ESPN. Okay, cool.
And usually Wikipedia gets updated pretty quick. So
they really only have they have Beetle and then they have Robert Flores, but I don't know how much the Robert Flores connection is there because he did Bound for Glory or whatever, or Slammiversary or whatever it was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what their connections are there. But Coachman was the strongest one they had there.
Hey, guys, is, speaking quickly, since you mentioned Bound for Glory, just real quick, since we're all Canadians, bunch of, you know, bunch of hose heads up here, is TNA now the biggest Canadian-based wrestling company in the world, like, in history?
I guess.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I guess, it probably have the biggest amount of money poured into it.
Is it based in Toronto? Like, I don't really know really what's going on.
Ottawa, I think.
So the Impact Zone is now in Ottawa?
Yeah.
They closed their Nashville, they closed the Nashville office, and all the offices now are out of Toronto.
And can we say, too, that they fired everyone from the law? Thanks, guys.
Well, they had to pay for this because they're losing money on this thing, but it's now basically a Canadian company, a Canadian-based promotion. I don't know that it'll tape up here so often, but it has already taped up here. And yeah, I mean, their American offices are closed. They are now based out of Toronto. So I guess, and technically, they are the biggest Canadian wrestling promotion in history.
I haven't seen Bound for Glory except from Botchamania. Abyss got called Alley, but I did notice they had a giant maple leaf on their logo now.
Interesting.
Who, like, you watch Impact Wrestling then, or TNA, or
no,
whatever it's called?
Oh,
then?
God, no.
No. Have you ever seen Eli Drake wrestle?
No.
Okay, neither has Joel and I.
Couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
Now, I know he's the world champion, and I couldn't tell you anything else about it. I know who Laurel Ness is, but that's only because of who she's dating.
Who's she dating?
Zack.
Who?
Zack Ryder.
Oh.
Yeah, he dumped Emma for her.
Well, he's doing all right for himself now, isn't he?
Yeah,
I'm sure she's a nice-looking girl. I don't know her.
She's not Emma.
Well, not many people are Emma.
No, they're not. Yeah, I don't know. I do find interesting, too, when they did the, going back to the Hardy scene here, they said that anyone that leaves can take their intellectual property with them, which means if when Ethan the Carter leaves, which his contract is almost up, and he's only 34 years old, he can go to any promotion and be Ethan Carter the Third still.
Yeah. I don't know if he will, but he could.
No. Yeah. And it looks like Jeff isn't connected to anything anymore either.
Oh. Yeah.
By the way, looking at their champions, just on Wikipedia at the very least, they crowned all their champions, are all new in Ottawa, except for their world champion right now. They all seem to win on Bound for Glory. Yeah. Poor Matt Sydal is in that company right now.
Is he?
Yeah. He is the he's the Impact Grand Champion, whatever that means.
How many belts do they fucking have?
I don't know. I remember when Booker made the Legends Championship, and then they changed it to, like, a million damn different names of championships.
Oh, it was like the global championship at one point, and it was that belt was, they kept on giving it something new all the time.
I liked when Eric Young was in it and he had the suit on.
Yes,
it was a lot more serious. But
when he was leading, wasn't he leading? It was like there was like the British invasion, but they were a different group, like a world.
John Terry was in it, and he was damn useless.
Yeah.
Interesting. The history of TNA as a podcast, we could really get. What really did? When did you stop watching TNA, Mo? When was the end point for you? Because I know the day that it died for me. When was the end point for you?
See, I can't think of a specific day, but it was certainly it had something to do with what, you know, when it was. I think it was when all the homegrown talents started leaving. It was when Joe and AJ and these guys started leaving.
Were you still there when they were on Spike, or was it after Spike?
I was still paying. I was still watching some.
Yeah,
it was after Spike, I think, because it was. I mean, I saw, Bubba put Dixie through a table.
Right, which is and a good story.
I believe that was after.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure, but it was really that just like everybody left and it just kind of it faded away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it wasn't one thing where I was like, that's it. But it's just, I think, you know what it was? Maybe really when it looked like they were going to die, when Meltzer was like, it looks like they're done. I was like, thank God they're done. Because I was happy.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, I mean, it employs people and
of course, gives the guys, but Joel and I can agree with this. We're just so sick of being like, it's done. And then talking about like, so how's WWE going to handle
and
this?
And when it turned out they weren't done, I think that was it for me. I was just like, you know what? For me, they're done.
And I think the Hardy stuff kind of brought it back a little bit, but there really is no talent that interests me in that company.
I would watch the Hardy stuff on YouTube, but I wouldn't watch the programming.
Yeah. Like, I'm interested to see Bobby Lashley when he comes to the WWE, but I'm not interested to see him do anything there.
Yeah.
By the way, this is the company that had Okada and made him Goto.
You know what? I think that, but I do think it was about that time. Actually, that would have been it. I know exactly now what it was. And I think about it because it was about that time when the company was looked like it was going to die, and they were, you know. So I guess I wasn't watching when Dixie went through the table. I probably just saw that.
I saw that on YouTube.
Yeah, maybe I just saw that on YouTube because you know what it was? Was when the Spike said they wanted. Russo didn't want him around, and it turned out he was still working for them, and they were lying. And then that you know the email went out with him like tagging the wrong person. He ended up tagging Mike Johnson, I think, of instead of Mike Tenay.
Yeah.
And it found out that he was actually working for them. I think that was my moment of I hate Dixie so much. She's tried to make herself out to be this nice person. And instead, she's a lying, manipulative person, and I just disliked her so much.
Immortal. When they did Immortal, I was done.
Yeah, Immortal was bad.
When they turned Hogan and they turned Jeff, I'm like, you're turning Jeff Hardy. And also the abuse of Jeff Hardy. Just, it grossed me out.
There's been so many things. I was definitely missed. I was definitely upset. Like, I thought when they were doing the Aces and Eights, I thought they were a better product than WWE, and there was never a payoff for that. They ended up screwing it up, and that definitely hurt my interest in the product a lot, too.
Yeah. Joe, last comment, then we'll actually get out of here.
I just think, all in all, TNA is just TNA. I don't think that will ever really change. I think the company is so stained that it doesn't matter how many times they change the logo, no matter how many times they swap things around, it's the same company. So
because they work TNA and they are again now.
Yeah. This is what I say to TNA. Just go away.
All right, well, we've had quite a conversation. I'd love to do another one of these guys. Thanks, Mo, for coming on. Thanks, Joe, for coming on. And, Mo, you got a joke for us to go out on, like the old times?
TNA is a big enough joke. I don't think we need anything more.
TNA is. How about this? Oh, man, how do you confuse an archaeologist?
How?
Give him a tampon and ask him what period it came from.
Oh, boy. with that, for Josh, Joel, and Mo, cheers and enjoy the day, people.